Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Today, we're exploring the role of novelty in the human journey to success. Does embracing the new help us thrive, or is it just a distraction? Well, joining me is Christine Frueworth. She's author of Surviving Life's Storms and Thriving in the Aftermath. Christine is a professional career and life coach. Her book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Christine, go to flexcareersconsulting.com. That's flexcareersconsulting.com. And you can follow her on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. Could you explain? I know what a career coach is. I've never been able to understand the concept of a life coach. Then we'll get into more discussion about novelty, et cetera, and about your book. But what is a life coach versus a career coach?
Well, so yes, most of what I do with clients has to do with executive coaching or career coaching, which is obviously I focus on someone, what their life passion is, what their life purpose is, and then I try to help them structure a career around that. I taught at Georgetown and GW, where I worked with undergrads and taught a class on career management strategies, so which simulated the recruiting process. And I, again, with my client base, I basically go through a process. I work on their resume, cover letters, interview skills, networking strategy, developing a pitch, that kind of thing. Life coaching is a little more general, but it's setting goals for someone, helping them set goals for themselves. I do get into life coaching where people have to sort of make modifications to their life in order to be able to do the career coaching. So it's a little bit more general.
Mm-hmm. When they say life coach, it doesn't mean you're with them for their whole life, does it?
No. It isn't therapy. I would like to make the distinction. It's not therapy. I don't have that background. And what I would say, if this can help you, is just that therapy is when somebody is like not functioning. They're under what they call the functioning line. They're struggling to like really function and deal with some trauma or healing. Life coaching comes in at the functioning line, and we're just trying to help them enhance their lives.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No. So, I mean, if ever I'm dealing with a client and I feel like they really need therapy because the coaching is not going to work because they're either, you know, in survival mode, which I talk about in the book, then I will tell them you should probably get some therapy first and then come back to me when you can really make these changes in your lives.
When you wrote the book, and again, it's called Surviving Life Storms and Thriving in the Aftermath. When you wrote the book, how much of it was a reflection of your personal experiences as opposed to your professional interactions with people?
So my life story is threaded throughout the book. I talk very openly about the life storms that I have faced. Some of them I think people can really relate to. And then there's a few things that I think is a little out of the ordinary that I've had to experience. I do talk a little bit about my youngest son. I have three children, two sons, 24 and 19, and a daughter who's 21, almost 22. My youngest son has gone through some very intense turmoil. And I do talk a little bit about his story because he was the motivation for writing this book and creating the framework in which I did. But throughout the book, I also have 9 or 10 other people highlighted who have also dealt with some difficulties in their life, their life storms, and have overcome them and are really thriving in their lives or getting there. And so I do talk about that. I do occasionally talk about a client. I change names, of course, but for the most part, it's not just my story. It's not an autobiography, but I do to be, you know, to connect with the reader. I do talk about my life.
Do you have a sense that you got through it and part of your mission is to now, as a result of going through all of that, to help other people? In other words, was it translated immediately into that idea that you said, you know what, here's what I've gone through on so many different levels, and I can help people navigate their own situation by writing this book?
Yeah, I do hope that the book can be helpful to people by creating the framework and applying it to certain areas of life and being inspirational. But what I have found in my experience, just either in my world, my personal world, or with my client base that I've had over almost a more than 20-year period, is the fact that most people, and this is also some research I've done, 80% of people are either in survival mode or they're just sort of survive, you know, enduring their lives, or they're just sort of stable and stagnant. And so only about 20% of people are actually thriving. So I want to help people understand what thriving is and that it is achievable. And I would like to try to ultimately help the 80% get into the 20%. So even if I can have any impact to grow that 20%, so more people are thriving and really living up to their fullest potential, which I equate the two things to each other, I think that that would be what I really want to accomplish in the book.
Why is it such a high percentage, 80% of non-thrivers? What is the catalyst for that? Is it internal or external in the sense that how much is culturally induced or societally induced versus they're having internal conflicts and it's preventing them from thriving?
There's probably a combination for sure. I think that a lot of it, though, I address at the front end of the book is just it is internal. It's wounds, it's trauma. It's sort of a belief system, you know, negative beliefs or limiting beliefs. It can be around fears, fears of change, fears of taking a risk. But sometimes it comes from patterns that develop from childhood even, or just difficult relationships. Some of it can be external. I do think sometimes people don't live within their means. And if that's the case, you know, that's going to also be difficult to thrive in your life. Also, people succumb to addictions, which I believe would also prevent you from thriving. So I do address those types of things in the beginning of the book before I get into the framework and the different stages of, I have four stages of living. And before I even get to that, I talk about what are the things that you have to kind of clear. I mean, a lot of us carry a lot of baggage and it's very normal. But it's also there. I feel that there's a lot of wounded people operating in the world and they're just not going to be able to get there if they don't sort of unpack their baggage.
You mentioned the four stages. Would you like to share with us those four stages?
Sure. So the four stages of living that I came up with is surviving, stabilizing, but not stagnating, emerging, and then thriving. So I call it the SSET framework.
Mm-hmm. Well, thriving seems to be the ultimate goal of it. How important is, and I ask it more from a personal point of view, but I think it works for a lot of people, is how important is having a sense of humor in really thriving and getting out of that stuck state?
To have a sense of humor?
Yes.
I think you should try to have a sense of humor and not take things too seriously. I do think that you need to have a good group around you, people that are positive, who are supportive, sort of figuring out who's on your bus. You know, you get to control that a little bit. But yeah, having a good sense of humor, having a positive mindset. So the four components of full potential that I talk about in the book, one is developing knowledge and skills. And the other is developing or setting out and achieving goals that are realistic. The third component is developing inner strength, you know, resilience. And then the fourth thing is a positive mindset. So humor is part of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you found that, you mentioned earlier about you're not obviously not a therapist, but do you find that if you were to look at your client base and people that you've talked to and helped, that part of it, therapy, is a more significant part than we thought of in terms of achieving your goals or to thrive? Is it Is it therapy so that you try to deal with your inner demons, and so that way you can focus on really prospering? I'll use that term, prospering versus thriving, but either way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I talk about the need for therapy if you're in survival mode. So everybody's going to experience survival mode in their life multiple times, because any time you have a crisis, whether it's a, you know, a bankruptcy, a divorce, a health crisis, someone dies in your family, expectedly or unexpectedly, like, we are all going to be set back into that mode. But it's very, very unhealthy to live in that, and you can't sustain it. It affects your being in fight, flight, or mm-hmm. whatever the rest of it is. Right. Fight or flight mode, or freeze, is the fact that it's very bad for your body, creates inflammation and disease, and it's very bad for your emotional and your mental state. If you, for some reason, cannot get out of that as the crisis subsides, then therapy is the best route. Mm-hmm. Life coaching cannot really kick in until you're in a stable place and you just want to, you know, enhance your life from there and get into the emerging phase and then the thriving stage with a life coach or a career coach.
You said earlier, which I thought was interesting, it was the stability versus stagnation. You want to get to a stable level, not a stagnant level.
Right. So stagnation is when you're literally stuck in your comfort zone. And that I do believe, and I say this in the book, that it's a risk, but it is also a choice. Okay. So sometimes being in survival mode, we don't have a choice because there are external situations at play. But I do believe that you should stabilize out of a crisis or in a very difficult time in your life, a setback or storm. But once you are in a stable place, you shouldn't stay there. Because I think that, if again, that's a choice that you're making, because maybe there's some fears or beliefs that your life can't even be better than it is.
When you're in that phase, though, doesn't it also become, you mentioned it earlier, doesn't it also become a comfort zone for you as well? You're so in that survival mode that that's all you know at that point. You've reacted to some event in your life or catastrophe in your life, and you are in survival mode, which allows you to cope and get through the day and deal with what you have to deal with. So you get to a point where you're comfortable with that mode, and you don't necessarily want to explore beyond that, because who knows, again, some other event may happen that will cause you to go backwards and go back into survival mode.
So that is true. That is true. And I think that the one thing I say in the book is just that even if you get to thriving, you are going to face events in your life. You're going to lose people, or something's going to happen where you are going to kind of fall backwards into a previous stage. But the framework and building your confidence and building your resilience is going to enable you to get back on the path to get, and you know that you can get to a emerging and thriving stage again. So again, it's a framework that you can go back and forth. It's not a destination. You know, there's that phrase that life is a journey, not a destination. And I do talk about this from a survive to thrive journey. It is a journey, and you will potentially fall back, but it's okay, because you know that you don't have to necessarily stay where you are. And I try to encourage readers to take risks, you know, and so you're only going to fail if you fail to try. And actually, you learn a lot about your failure. A lot of people say this, and it's true, that you learn the most from failures, not from your successes. So if you can get into the fact that even setbacks are an opportunity for you to learn to be better, a better person, then it really is, it can enable you to get to move forward.
Aren't there people, though, that are not pigheaded or stubborn, but maybe they hear you, but it doesn't compute. In other words, they say, well, I'm perfectly fine. I mean, I go to work every day, and I have a roof over my head, and I have three square meals a day, or round meals a day, depending on what you order. It could be a pizza, which would be round in most cases, but or sometimes square. But what do you do with those kinds of people? Or maybe you don't do anything with them if they're just convinced that there's nothing wrong with the way they're living, but they're really just surviving. They're not thriving. But to them, they may not even understand the concept of thriving in life. It may be, just be they're used to a certain, and I'm just thinking there are certain people that I've encountered over the years that's just the way they live. It's a lifestyle, and it's not that they're afraid of changing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even occur to them to change. It seems to be what they are.
Yeah, and I think it's fine to be content. And I don't want anyone to feel that there's a judgment that you're not doing enough in your life. If you're content and you have good relationships and you're happy and you are getting a promotion here and there, or you're happy with your job and you don't feel like you need to push yourself any further, that's fine. And I'm not trying to make everyone into a thriving person. It's more just, I know there's a population though that are stuck. Right. And so I'm trying to help that group get into that emerging is preparing to thrive. And so there's this, I really spend a lot of time talking about that stage, which is the preparation for it. And, I don't judge anyone in it. If people are content with their lives, but there's a lot of people that I deal with that come to me, and I have two distinct client bases that I work with. One group is
you're very corporate. I like the way you say client basis as opposed to simply saying clients.
Yeah, I have two niche groups.
Okay, that's
one group. Ever since I started my company 20 years ago, it's been women in sort of mid age who are returning to the workplace, and or they are working moms who are trying to balance their lives better or push their careers ahead. So that's that one group. Mm-hmm. The other group are young adults who I call, so the first group's my relaunchers, my other group, my young adults are launching their lives. And so they're primarily younger men. Okay. There's women. I do work with young women, but young men are struggling even more than women right now in that population. So for me, it's like, what is the potential in your life? What are your dreams? Like, really, what is your purpose? And so how can I help you best achieve your purpose? And so I do think a lot of people are working and they're getting a paycheck, they're paying their bills, they're having a family, but I don't think that they're very fulfilled. Right. And so what I'm trying to help people is, and even if women are not in the workplace, I talk to them about what is going to fulfill you in your life that will help you, as you are raising your children, what else besides just doing that, which is very noble. I did it myself. I was out of the workforce for a couple of years when my two oldest children were young, very young, like babies. But I'm not saying that there, but I'm talking about personal fulfillment and purpose. That's the thing that, my certification is with the Life Purpose Institute. So to me, it's like, I'm trying to help people if they do have a dream, they just sort of put it on the back burner, or they just feel like, my life is, this is my plot in life and I'm just going to do this. That's the population that I'm really trying to talk to in this book.
You mentioned the young men that you're working with. And what is the reason for them having an issue? Is it society? Is it culture that they constantly, the messages are toxic masculinity, or, men are depicted in the mass media usually as buffoons or less than perfect, whatever it is. Is that part of the problem, the messages they receive growing up?
Yes. I've been following two individuals that do a lot of work in this. Richard Reeve is one, and the other is Scott Galloway. And they talk a lot about how society has basically turned their back on men, young men. And, men, there's other things at play here as well. I think the education system is geared more towards girls than boys. And I think one of the things that Richard Reeve talks about is that boys should start kindergarten at 6. Okay. Their brains develop slower than girls. And so my youngest son, the one I talked about who had a significant crisis in his adolescence, he did 5 years of high school when he switched schools. So he's now 19 going to college. So he's a year, and it's been the best thing for him. And some boys need a gap year, or they might, you know, reclass as he did. Also, I think boys are more susceptible to video games, TikTok. I mean, both genders are into that, but they're into porn and other influences online that I think also prevents them from thriving. I think that, you know, more colleges, more women than men are in college right now. I mean, it's about 60 women, 40 boys or young men, and less men are graduating from college. And so I think that their education, women are progressing quite nicely, which is great, but young men are falling behind. So there is some societal things that are going on. There's also some biology at play. It's affecting family formation. It's, you know, there's economic factors at play. It's more difficult to buy a home. More young people than ever are living with their parents after college, and or if they don't even go to college. So I think this is a generational thing that needs to be addressed. But Scott Galloway talks about the fact that this is the first generation that's doing worse than their parents at this age.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk, we could go an hour on just that subject, but I want to talk about what I mentioned earlier in the introduction, which is the power of novelty and how that stimulates the brain. And you're focusing on that in the book as well. What is it about novelty, something new that enhances the brain? It almost, this is a terrible analogy, but in the world of conspicuous consumption, which we are famous for in America, you order something on Amazon, you get it, it's great, it's a shiny new object, whatever it is. It could be a book, your book, or it could be something else. And then within a day or two, all of a sudden you're bored with what you purchased, some toy or gadget or whatever, and now you're looking for the next best thing. So there's that part of it, but you're not really talking on the negative side of novelty. You're talking the positive side of novelty. So now I'll shut up and let you explain.
Well, so novelty, the way I look at novelty, it's not so much, you know, buying the next shiny object or, you know, the consumption piece of it. I think I get what you're saying, and that, you know, you can talk about the new iPhone that's come out or something like that that you want to get. But what I'm talking about is actually doing activities, you know, something that takes you out of your comfort zone. And I'll give a few examples in a moment, but this is really just trying something that you haven't ever done before. And it's not necessarily has to be jumping out of an airplane or, you know, bungee jumping or something like that, but it's more something that you feel like it could be just taking a class. It could be just doing something creative that you've never done. I mean, it could be, and I'll get, you know, I'll give an example that to try to test doing something on your own and not necessarily waiting for a partner or a friend to do it with you. And you might, you get a little bit of sense of like butterflies, or you get like, you know, you're just a little nervous about it, and it's, and it does flood your brain with dopamine. And so one example I would use is that, you know, I went to an event where I knew absolutely no one at the event, and it was like 250 people.
You're a brave soul.
Excuse me?
You're a brave soul.
Well, I let me tell you, it's not like me. I wouldn't say I'm introverted, but I'm sort of maybe slightly extroverted, but that's not something that I would normally do. And the friend that I was going to go to the event with, she canceled that day. And I got why. I wasn't upset with her. But then I thought, well, I don't really want to go because I'm by myself. And I went to this place. I'd never gone to this venue before. And I was I was really nervous about it. And I walked into the room, and I didn't know anyone. I went into the restroom and I got my strength. And I said, just give myself a half an hour to do this. And I did. And I actually ended up staying there for an hour and a half. And I just found one person, another parent, who was my age. And she was just sort of standing by herself. And I went over and talked to her. And then she introduced me to other people. And, you know, I felt so good about doing that. Like, the event was fine. It wasn't anything special, but it was the fact that I did that. And then I've been trying to, you know, I joined a pickleball place that I don't know anyone there, you know, And it's sort of like you want to do something that you're interested in, but that you may actually get to meet new people. And it could be something that you've never tried before, and you might do that with people you know or not. But it's the reason you want to do this is because it will start to create new pathways in your brain where you can start to build that confidence and then do bigger things in your life. So if you're not ready to start a business or change your job or write a book or do something big, like a big goal, every month, what I want people to try to do is do something novel, something that you've never tried before. And then you build the inner strength, the confidence, and you will get like a boost. You will feel it like, okay, I did that. Instead of staying home or waiting for someone else to do it with you, it really does make, and I do this with my clients where I'm like, let's do something small that maybe you've put off. A client of mine was like, she had to do like her closet, her work closet was just, her workspace was a disaster. Her closet was just, nothing was filed or anything. And so we had her like just schedule an afternoon to do it. And then again, it kind of cleared up. She's like, okay, now that I've done that, I can now do other things, right? So it's just maybe doing something that either you're procrastinating on, that's one aspect, but also trying something different.
Does it reach a point where novelty can be too much of a distraction if you do it too often and becomes counterproductive? You mentioned once a month. If someone starts doing it once a week or once a day, does it maybe become an excuse for not doing the main thing because you're always experiencing new adventures and new people?
I don't see a risk in that. I do suggest once a month and just sort of try that because you have your normal life is you got to deal with your normal life. And I'm not saying I don't want somebody to get like addicted to dopamine and just have to do it every day. I don't think that that's the risk though. I think people, if anything, I'm trying to get people really do hunker into their comfort zone. And this is just living life a little bit on the edge of your comfort zone. That's where change can really happen.
Before I let you go, what's the main thing you want people to take from reading your book? Again, it's called Surviving Life's Storms and Thriving in the Aftermath.
I want people to really embrace this survive to thrive journey, realizing that you can't get from survival mode to thriving directly. And that, you know, if you follow my framework and apply it to different areas of your life, I do think that you will be happier in life. And I think that once you do that, at the end of the book, I talk about how do you do that for other people? And how do you be like a mentor and really like embrace other people and their journeys and give them inspiration? So that's also my hope for the book. And, also, if you need a life coach or a career coach, that I am available and work with people all over the country and, in fact, internationally. So that's the other reason I wrote the book.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Christine Frueworth. She's author of Surviving Life's Storms and Thriving in the Aftermath. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And follow her on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. And Christine, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Ira. I enjoyed our conversation.
Same here. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.